Let's get started. The mark of the beast and the seal of God. We know the seal of God is the Sabbath. We know the mark of the beast is Sunday keeping. Alan, would you be kind enough to have our benediction for us? Well, we could almost stop there. Yeah, I'm telling you. Well, this is the third week in a row I've taught, and I've already said how much I like Roger, so let's kind of tackle this. We are told that in the last days, there's going to be a great deception. And the deception is going to be so great that almost the very elect can be deceived. How is that possible? Pardon?
It says almost.
Almost, yeah, almost. How is that possible? What is it that's going to be a possible deception to you? We're all here. We're worshiping on the right day, right? Okay. We're certainly not worshiping on Sunday. So, what in the world could it be that could almost, and you're exactly right, it's a key word, but almost says, you know, I don't say I'm almost handsome. See? I know better. Almost means close. Yes.
You know how when politicians are asked a question, they answer the question they want to have been asked? So this is my response. When Jesus was here on earth, the Seventh-day Adventists at that time were absolutely positive they knew who the Messiah was going to be, and they were willing to kill Jesus. I hope we're not in the same boat right now. We absolutely know what the mark of the beast is and what the seal of God is.
Okay.
And I hope we're not in danger of being blind to the truth when it actually comes along. Okay.
Now, you said something that's very interesting, is that we know what the seal of God is. We know what the mark of the beast is, do we?
That no is in quotation marks.
I understand. Do we? Is that all there is to it? See, a couple of weeks ago, challenged to the fact is that when we come across Revelation, and let's take this one specific because that's the lesson that Roger refused to teach when I asked him. Is, let's take it specific, if we know everything about the seal and the mark, then why are we even fooling with it? Or do we know everything? Or do we think we know everything? See, we think we know everything. We being just general. Okay, well, it's probably a good statement. You see, if we look at this lesson specifically, but Revelation or Daniel or the 2300 days, Mr. Taylor missed it last week. He wanted me to repeat it, but I don't repeat. But if we look at it in the context that we already know the answer, then are we in a danger of missing something? Let me give you an example in my own life. As you know, if I had only one sermon to preach, it's always on Abba, Daddy. And it's centered around the prodigal son. I have probably studied the prodigal son at a period of time every week for years. Now that's a simple parable. But in my mind, and literally reading, there's times I go through. Well, one time, I don't know how I missed it, but when the son came up to the father, the daddy, what did the daddy do?
Ran.
A very simple word. Very simple word picture. Do you know it took me literally years to focus on that one word, ran. And then all of a sudden, it just took that parable and just really widened it for me. Because I went and researched, you know, Luke says he ran. Well, that's a nice picture. What did it mean? It meant everything because it broke down every Jewish custom that there was at that time. The daddy, a father, difference between a father and a daddy. Anybody can be a father. Special person is a daddy. At that time, father stood on the front porch, and I don't care who came. They came up on that porch and met the father there in the doorway. And all of a sudden, to see what a daddy does when he looked far off and saw his son, he broke every rule and custom there was and he ran. Now, why didn't I pick that up the very first time that I read it? Because I was busy looking over here. I was busy looking at here. I tried for literally years, off and on, to try to prove that the older brother had some good to him. Why was I motivated for that meal? He can tell you. Yeah. Why was I motivated?
You have a brother that...
Yeah, I have a brother from hell. And so... You know, my folks doled out money to him. They bailed him out of jail. They did, you know. And so I tried to figure out how the elder brother fit into that parable in a better light. Well, you can't. Because he doesn't. But see, I was busy trying to figure out the elder brother's role to kind of fit my picture, hopefully, that I missed. He ran. That's the problem we have when we think that we understand specifically the mark of the beast and the seal of God. If we already know the answer, then we are just wasting our time. So, I go back. Two, it says that in the end we could almost be deceived. How is that possible to you? What do you think can deceive you? I'm going to come back to what you said because it's very, very pertinent. But what do you think could deceive you?
Peer pressure.
Peer pressure, who said that? Absolutely. That's one of them.
One thing that's been deceptive to me is thinking that God's rule, God's laws operate like human laws.
Okay. Yes. What's going to deceive you? How about state of the dead?
No.
Going to deceive you? Y'all had a good father. Correct? What are you going to do if he shows up one day knocking on your door and tell you I've come back from heaven and we're wrong? We're wrong. I thought we were doing the right thing. But I have a new message for you. What are you going to do? Because we're told that can happen.
You close the door and you lock.
Oh, that's simple.
Say, get thee behind me, Satan.
That's simple. That's simple.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have children and till I married Sue. And then I inherited some. And so before I had no children, guess who had all the answers for child rearing? Voila! You know, boy, why don't you do this? Why don't you, you know? Then inherited them. And then I realized the mistake that I make. It's easy when you're not involved to know right and wrong with how to rear children. Right? They're bawling. Whip their butt. I guess today you get prison, but back then that seemed like a logical thing to do. You know, discipline people, they'll not anything. Till you're emotionally involved with them, and then instead of doing what you think is, you know, is correct, you emotionally make decisions hoping that they'll figure it out themselves or hoping that they'll change, and so you let them slide. So it's easy to say, get thee behind me, Satan. But you better have something in your life that's the foundation to give you that strength to say that. Because right now, you have the correct answer. Lock the door, get thee behind me, Satan. But see, when reality hits in the final days, there is no game plan. I demonstrated last week that Jesus, that Satan, when he comes, his feet are going to touch the earth. So we all get our binoculars out and we watch those feet and we say, you know, and all of a sudden, I mean, that's our concept. How we know it's the devil. His feet touch the ground. What else is going to help deceive you?
That cloak themselves in Christianity that are fairly close, and they just lead you a little further and a little further astray. And it sounds good at first, and then they start getting a little further and further away, and pretty soon you're way off.
Yep. It's just like, you know, cooking a frog in water. You put it in, the water's not hot, and he just gets comfortable, and then you keep turning it up, and finally you got frog legs. However, frog legs run clean, aren't they? Okay. Well, you got veggie burger. All right. Yeah. What else can deceive you? Yes?
I think anything can deceive us if we get disoriented enough. It's easy to doubt yourself. The only thing that's going to keep any of us from being deceived is understanding God well enough that we can say, Lord, I don't understand this, but I trust you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Did y'all hear that? You got to trust God to say, I don't understand. I have not a clue. In fact, I'm unhappy with you. I just preached a sermon in where?
Keller.
Nah.
Phil-Ann.
Yeah, that one. 3 or 4 weeks ago. Ooh, three. And I preached on, have you argued with God?
Yes.
Now see, there's a bumper sticker that says, God says it, I believe it, and that's it. Remember that? Well, boy, that sounds great. Except that's not true. So my sermon was, have you argued with God? Well, I took the text, Moses, up in Sinai. God says, Moses, I'm going to destroy all these people. And Moses, he should have said, well, let's see, God, you said it, I believe it, and that's it. But he didn't. He said three things. God, number one, you can't do that because that's not like you. Number two, which I think is hilarious, he says, the reason you can't do that is, what would the Egyptians say? The Egyptians would say, see, for 400 years, we had the children of Israel, and we just made slaves out of them. You've had them. Remember, this was less than 2 months. You've had them for less than 60 days, and you want to kill them. Get the irony of that? 400 years, we just enslaved them. You haven't left in 60 days, and you want to kill them. So Moses says, you can't do that. What would the Egyptians say? And then third, he says, God, you gave a promise to Abraham, and you've got to keep it. See, we need to argue with God. By the way, he asked a rhetorical question when he said, you know, it's like Sue saying, well, we can't do that. Well, that's just opening a dialogue. That's a conversation starter where I come from. See, so that's what God was saying to Moses. Well, I'm going to destroy them all. That's a conversation opener. What do you see as the biggest danger in the last days? And then I'm going to tell you what I see. What do you see as the biggest danger? We got the seal of God. We got the mark of the beast. We got a beast, a dragon roaming around, beast making homage to the dragon. It's doing all of these things. And here over here is this little remnant. What do you see as the biggest danger?
Analogy of a true compass.
Okay.
The true compass points to true north. And as long as you have an eye on true north, the real picture, the true picture, the correct, the proper, is we'll deviate. We hear that analysis just one little degree off somewhere along the line, you wind up in Singapore instead of wherever. And I think the same thing applies to my understanding and our pursuit of God's character. You know, I think we can get lost going round and round and round talking about the false gods and all the deceptions and the myriad of misunderstood things that can come our way, and it probably will come our way. But the only answer I can come with, I'm not going to figure out all those things. I'm not going to know how to defend myself against all of that. I just don't think. But if I have a true picture of God's character, and I focus on that, and I keep studying, and I keep pursuing God's character of love, then I think that the other temptations, the other things that come along our way are going to be, we'll be able to see the difference. We'll be able to make that correction, say, no, that's not my understanding of God's character, in whatever form it may come. So I think our only prayer is to maintain your compass on the true character of God.
Okay. Good with that. Yes?
How about my own greed and selfishness?
Okay. Yeah. The battle's within. What else? What do you think that we have to fear?
Distractions.
Pardon?
Distractions and busyness, so you don't have time to spend with God to understand His true character.
It's coming. Yeah. What do you think you have to fear?
We all look for security. And if we think anything other than God is a security, then we...
What do you think is the biggest thing that we have to fear? Is it a nation? Is it a religion? Then why do we spend so much time as a denomination in tracking a certain religion and what they do? I had a guy last week come to me. He says, I appreciate what you say, but he says, you do understand that most of my family disagrees with you. I said, yeah, I'm very aware of that. The reason I'm aware of it is on Facebook, one of the people are tracking the Pope every day. So that, you know, he doesn't sneak up on us. Now, I believe there's a common thread, I've said this many times, and that history repeats itself. And that there's a common thread that goes through the Bible. So let's begin at the beginning of time. Adam and Eve. We know what happened in the garden. We know what happened with Cain and Abel. And how many generations was it that God's people, He created two, and how and what were they? What was Adam and Eve?
Male and female.
No.
Perfect.
Perfect. Perfect. And how many generations did it take that man was so evil and came up with such evil devising? Yes, Angela. Pardon? That God destroyed what He made. So He starts over. Now, how many He got?
How many?
I don't know if that's good English or not.
Eight.
And how perfect were they? Not. And how long? I don't know. How long did that take that those eight, who, by the way, did they represent? Who did Adam and Eve represent? God. A reflection of God's character. Who did Noah and his family, God intended for them to represent? God. And how long did it take till man wanted to build his own, the Tower of Babel? It got so bad that they went into slavery for 400 years in Egypt. Now, God does not forget His people. I'm sure that if I was a slave in year 200, I would have the right to say, what is going on here? Let's see. You said to Abraham, I will give you some land. And all I'm doing is getting beaten. But after 400 years, God calls approximately 1 million. And they come to Sinai, and now they are the chosen people. And who are they to reflect? God. In fact, God put them in the promised land in Canaan, the crossroads of the world, and the missionaries didn't go out. As people came to Canaan, it was God's plan that they would see prosperous, good crops, great people, friendly people, fantastic people, and they would stop and say, what do you have that I don't have? And they said, let me tell you about God, the God that we serve. That was His plan. Well, how did it work? They started intermingle. They started marrying other people. They started bringing in gods. It got so bad that God sent the Babylonians, the Assyrians, in to take them into captive, sent them to Babylon, gave them the 2300-day prophecy, which meant nothing to them at that day. They didn't care. They could have cared less. But it told them that God is in control. And they came out. Now, the Israelites learned their lesson with idolatry. When they came out of Babylon, idolatry was no longer a problem. We have no record of any idolatry. And so here they are, as Mr. Al Allen said, now here they are, keeping the right day, eating the right food, paying the right tithe, reading their scripture every day, studying their Sabbath school lesson faithfully, and looking at everything in the Old Testament, and memorizing it. They were perfect in their eyes. And along comes the Messiah, the Creator of the universe. And He says to them, see here in Isaiah? Yeah, that's me. Can't be. See over here? That's me. Can't be. In fact, you're making us so mad that we're going to kill you. God's chosen people. Now, who do we have to fear today?
Ourselves,
absolutely. Could it be our own denomination? Read the Sabbath school lesson. I didn't write it. If you read this quarterly, I don't know who the author is. I'm sure that he had great intentions. This goes through so many committees that, as I said at one time, I had a copy of the Sabbath School Lessons from Jonathan Gallagher. And when the quarterly came out, you couldn't even hardly recognize it from what he wrote. And the conference was so nice about it. They informed Mr. Gallagher that if he put any more of these out, that they would fire him. I say this because the quarterly says that we have all the answers.
And they did fire
him. Pardon?
And they did fire
him. Well, they did fire him, yeah. The quarterly says that we have all the answers. Well, I can't accept that. I know that they have good meaning. I was rebaptized the Seventh-day Adventist, I'll put it that way. So I've made a major adult decision to rejoin this church. And I believe in this church. But I'm more fearful of the Seventh-day Adventist Church than I am ever of the Roman Catholic Church. Because when we have the answers, we're in trouble. What if we have the answers today? I think this is a fair question. Aren't we going to be bored out of our gourd in heaven? God's going to come along and said, you know, I would like to explain to you the mark of the beast and the seal of God. Ha! I'm going to skip that one.
Asked you to teach the 2300.
Go have me do the 2300. That's right. You see? That's scary to me. The mark of the beast is in the forehead and in the hand of the wicked. What does that mean to you? By the way, where is the seal of God? Pardon?
In the forehead.
Why isn't the seal of God in the hand?
Because the law is going to be in your mind. Okay.
Then why do the wicked have the mark of the beast in the forehead and on the hand?
Actually, I think it says or the hand, doesn't it?
Pardon?
I think it says or the hand, doesn't it?
I didn't hear you.
I think it says or the hand.
Yeah.
You have it in one or the other.
Yeah, it's one or the other. Why? What's the difference? Well, when you read Revelation, it says there's going to be two types of people that are going to be lost. Been nice if it had just said Sunday keepers. Then it would have saved us a whole lesson. We'd have done been eating, those that eat out on Sabbath, we'd have done been eating lunch. Where are you eating today?
Oh, my house.
Your house? What's the occasion?
Just
you need money?
Or...
I mean,
Go. It's Ellie's coming out party.
Huh?
Ellie, my two.
Oh,
she's
okay.
She's leaving the family.
Oh, okay. I just didn't know. I mean, you know, you got to keep up with these people. It says there's going to be two types of people. Those who admire the beast and the principles, and they're going to have the mark in their head. But there's going to be those that are scared of the beast, scared of the power, and they're going to give up and say, well, I just don't want to go through this. And that's going to be on the hand. They don't particularly believe, but they don't want to go through the strength of things. Now, what seals God's people in the last days? Because there's something to the seal. I believe there's a seal, absolutely. But what is it? What seals them?
Your mind's made up.
Pardon?
Your mind's made up.
Mind's made up? What does that mean?
Trust God in my life.
Trust.
You understand His character well enough to trust Him through it all.
That's the correct answer. What?
Trust.
Trust.
Our character reflects His.
Not your character? Yeah. What sealed Job? Seventh day Sabbath? Okay, I don't know exactly how you mean that, so I'll take that, but that was an ultimate reason. What sealed him? The seventh day Sabbath?
He never lost faith, his trust in
trust. He said, though you slay me, yet will I trust.
Yeah. He lost everything except his wife. And we all know why. You see, if you look at the principles throughout the Bible, they stay the same. In Job's time, which many people... All right, sit down. Job's time, many people think it was the first book of the Bible written. The issue was the character of God. It's the issue throughout the Bible. Can God be trusted? In the Garden of Eden, He didn't say to serpent to Eve, hey, you're keeping the wrong day. You ought to be worshiping on Sunday, a day of freedom. No, He said, look what God is hiding from you. Did God say you were going to die? Sure tastes good. Oh, by the way, I'm not dead. God's hiding you because He knows if you eat this, you'll be just like Him. That was the issue. And then there's a council in heaven. And here Satan is representing the earth. And he's marching around. I got this thing under control. I'm happy. Wow, look at what I've accomplished. Look at these people. They're following me. I am doing all this. And finally God says, excuse me. Because God's always polite. Excuse me. What about Job? Well, you bought Job off. Well, take everything from him, just don't touch him. And he does. And God says to the devil, well, how's that going? Well, you got lucky. If you just let me touch him, you'll see the difference. And so he says, do whatever you want to. Can't take his life. Do you understand that that is a forerunner of the time of trouble for us? And Job had some mighty hard questions. The great theologians of the day came to him and they had their answers. Man, fess up. By the way, these theologians, they were head elders of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. You understand that? God is against you, Job. God is punishing you for your sin, so you better fess up. I don't know what in the world you have done, but man, you better get right with God and confess it, or look what He's doing to you. In the 60s, this was a nicer message, but that was prevalent on the message that we learned. Do good, God blesses you. Do bad, don't tell Him what's going to happen to you. And then I actually read the book of Job one day. And as I've stated many times, why was I born? Why me? How could you do this to me? Why didn't you let me die in my mother's womb? Well, does that sound like a good Seventh-day Adventist that should say, bring it on? No. This is a person that knows God. But he came to the conclusion, I don't know why, I don't know the answer. And by the way, we have no record that Job found out the answer. Because remember, he said, though God, you take my life, you've taken my children. You've taken everything I've had. If you take my life, I still trust you. But I sure don't know why you're doing this. And then God came down and said to the universe, Job has said the right thing of me. But we have no record of him going to say to Job, Job, let me explain what's going on. Now, let's go to Jesus. We say, well, that's Job. What was Jesus' prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane? By the way, the victory was won in the Garden of Gethsemane. It happened on the cross, but the victory was won in Gethsemane. That was Jesus' time of trouble. And what was his prayer? What did he say? What did he say before that? It's what he said before that that's interesting. Get me out of this. See, this is real life. If this is the creator of the universe who could not see past the crucifixion in his humanity, could not see past the crucifixion. And in his humanity, just as us, in the Garden of Gethsemane, where the devil was there and God was there working, Jesus said, just as Job, I don't understand this. If there's any way you can get me out of this, get me out of here. But it's the next sentence that is important. But Thy will be done. Now we come to our day. What is our picture of God as a denomination? What message do we share that's important in changing people's lives? So I'll ask the same question I asked last week. What is the most pertinent question that's going on for the last 2 to 3 years at the General Conference of the Seventh-day Adventist?
Women's ordination.
Women's ordination. Man, the devil is just dancing up and down. Sue and I mentioned we went to San Francisco, and I got a humorous story, but I don't know if I ought to tell it or not. Huh? What? Oh, probably. Yeah. Now, see, that was a rhetorical question looking for an answer, and the answer is no. So, we saw homeless people like I've never seen homeless people. And it's very sad. And so we went to breakfast at 6 a.m. one morning because we had an all-day tour. And we ordered avocado, and thinking of Roger, ordered avocado and cheese and tomato and vegetable sandwich. Well, man, it was gigantic. We ordered two of them. It's gigantic. So you can only eat one, half of it. So we took the two halves, wrapped them up, and we gave it to a couple, you know, different homeless people. But it did cross my mind. And I have a problem sometimes with homeless people. Politically, but did cross my mind, would Jesus be here or would he be in the General Conference giving us guidance on women's ordination? And then I come to our quarterly, and the quarterly says we have all the answers. See, that's what scares me about any church but our church. Because the children of Israel out of Egypt represented God and failed miserably. The Pharisees at the time of Jesus represented God and failed miserably. Didn't even know him. I wrote a paper at Union College. Could the same thing happen to us as a church as did happen to the Pharisees, that the message would be taken from us? And I got a D minus on it, and I've never seen so many red marks in my life on the paper. But see, we think we have it made. We think we have the answers. We think we're the right church. There's a danger in that thinking. And then we come along and present to the world through evangelistic series and Bible studies that we are the right church. And so if we converted everybody to keeping the seventh-day Sabbath, would we be any closer than we are now? I think not. Because if we don't have the correct picture of God, and we don't have that trust, and we don't continue to develop and to take that relationship and make it stronger, we could be deceived. Because if we have the wrong picture of God, just as the Pharisees did, when Jesus walked by, they didn't even recognize him. Our church has been at this now for next year will be approximately 175 years. Something has to change. I don't know this for a fact, but if I was a betting man, I would bet that I could go back and find a quarterly 50 years ago that would say the same thing as today's quarterly. I guarantee it. That's the danger. Because we have to be moving. Read Ellen White. Ellen White's picture of God in the 50s is not the picture of God in the late 1890s and 1900s. Why wouldn't ours differ? Why wouldn't we develop? Why wouldn't we find stranger things? Why wouldn't we run across one day, the Father ran? Wonder what that word ran means. Why was that in there? See, that's the danger when you have the answers. Father in heaven, thank you for who you are. thank you for these people and this church and the message that you've given us. As always, salvation starts with us. And help us on a daily period to study and learn more about Thee and put our faith in Thee. Talk to You, ask You questions, and most importantly, wait for the answers. Help us to be closer to You. As we get closer to You, people will see Jesus in us and say, what do You have that I don't have? Thank You for being here today, and thank You again for this class. In Jesus' name, amen.